Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. I am your host, Sean Hayes, for episode 287 of this podcast to bring you the weekly... It's been a week, so much so that I completely forgot how to do the opening. Geeky news of the week. Latest and greatest geeky news of the week. Maybe. My brain is mush after the past week. So we're here, episode 287. We're going to talk about Lorcana for a little bit. I got to play some over this past weekend. So some of my thoughts and first impressions. And some interesting gaming news. Not a lot of Nintendo news, actually. There is one big piece of Nintendo news. But basically a little piece of news from each of the major console makers. And some of it good, some of it bad, and some of it weird. So hope everyone's doing well. And I apologize if I sound a little nasally. I'm recovering from another, I don't know if it's a cold or something again, but I've got a little bit of congestion. So if I sound a little off, that's why. So also, big shout out to those of you who have tuned in on YouTube, whether watching live or watching the VOD. Thank you for supporting that. And as always, thank you for folks who are listening in the audio format for the podcast. So this past weekend, why don't we just get right into it? So here we go. We'll just get right into our news. First things up is, so I wanted to talk about my experiences playing Lorcana, and just my general impressions from the rollout of this product, for the local, or for the folks who are listening locally, in my community, how our experience may differ from what a lot of folks are experiencing. So I played at our local game store, which is a great space, very welcoming space, very friendly space. Our local store owner, so the local store is Mana Crypt, and the local store owner, Chris, wanted to ensure that the folks who are buying product are going to be folks who are playing the game instead of reselling it as an investment. Because wanna focus and foster building a community for this game locally, so that there's people playing. Couple things to do this. There are some store policies about how much product you can buy. For example, there is a daily limit on booster packs. The pre-constructed, like the starter decks, are only available if you're going to play in open play that day, and a limit of one. So in theory, it'll take you 3 weeks to get all three of those decks. Limit one of like the Illumineer's Trove and the gift box and everything. But a lot of those were limited availability anyway. So as far as the prices go, very modest markup, in my opinion. So starter decks were $20. I think MSRP was $17. The other ones were not very much higher than MSRP. A little bit of a markup, so that the store is able to make money. But there are a lot of horror stories going on right now of, you know, and I don't know if its stores are kind of feeling the pressure from distributors, like if distributors are charging high prices, but markups of anywhere in the realm of, you know, 100 to 300% markups on these products. You know, for you know, and whether it's stores are doing that because, you know, they're concerned about making money and concerned about making their revenue and everything, or if it's they're sort of actively speculating on this. So I can safely say our local store is not engaging in that behavior, and really wanting to focus on fostering a community. The other one is that products will either like be sold to you opened in the case of like boxes and stuff, so that you can't turn around and resell it while it's still in the packaging. And booster packs will be like clipped to show that like this is not a mint product, or, you know, it's like if you tried to reseal it, like somebody will know that it's been tampered with, because like one of the corners is clipped and everything. Because there are scummy people who are figuring out ways on how to like get into booster boxes without like opening the top, pulling packs out, opening the packs up, taking like the valuable cards out, resealing the packs and putting them back in, or just taking all the cards out and just giving you an, like selling you an empty box. Because rollout, you know, whether they are intentionally limiting product to generate hype and demand, or they were just completely caught unawares, a lot of folks are seeming to lean towards thinking it's the former. I've bought a lot of Nintendo consoles and I played a lot of Nintendo games. It would not surprise me if like they thought it was, like they knew it was going to be popular, but they didn't realize how popular, or they're just not used to having to roll out this much of demand, or they had supply chain issues or something. This does not come as a shocker to me that demand is outstripping supply by quite a bit for a launch of something. Like, it's wild to me that people, you know, see this happening with a trading card game and are like, how could somebody conceivably do this, when this happens with literally every, you know, console launch? Doesn't matter which one. You know, I say Nintendo because that's been a thing, but that's been true for, I mean, it's still true for PS5s. Like, so I don't know. I'm willing to believe that, you know, maybe they generated a little too much hype and they went, oh no. And aren't able to keep up with demand. Now that said, so generally if you are in a place where all of the game stores around you are charging really high prices, I'm sorry. I know we are supposed, like, presumably at the end of the week or next week, end of next week, there will be like another wave of shipments, and also going to big box retailers. Some amount will be going to big box retailers. So hopefully that will sort of calm down maybe a lot of the demand, or at least people will be able to get their hands on product. But, you know, they have said they will keep printing sets, essentially, or chapters, as they're being called, as long as there's demand for it. So, you know, I would say don't break your bank over trying to get this game. Okay. You know, in theory, this game will be around for a while. So, you don't necessarily have to be in on the first wave. Now, if you are fortunate, like the folks that live in my community, and we have a great store, you know, that is selling at reasonable prices, then Absolutely. Yeah, you can, you know, and it's designed to be able to allow anybody who wants to play to be able to get cards to play with. So, now I only got to play one game, but it was a 5-player game. So that's why, yeah, basically just went straight to, let's do commander level type stuff. So funny enough, there are no special format rules for multiplayer that differ from 1v1. It scales up. And in my opinion, it kind of scales up pretty well. So that's neat. Like, and it, you know, and after that 2 hours, the game ended and it felt like it was very evenly matched. Like it didn't feel like it was a blowout win by any means. And there was a lot of back and forth and politicking, which you want in a multiplayer game. So, I can't speak to 1v1, unfortunately, which I know is how a lot of it's going to be played. My guess would be that my deck probably functions even better 1v1 than it does in multiplayer. So who knows? But it was a blast. It was an absolute blast. And like, I had a very terrible start, and even my deck was able to sort of get back in the game and pick up steam later on, even with a terrible start. That with Magic, I probably would have just been out of the game. So that was cool, like being able to actually come back and be in a position and like also be in a position where it's like it came down to my turn to see whether or not the game ended, you know, because the person immediately to the left of me would have been able to score points, enough points to win. And so it came down to top decking and seeing if I got the card I wanted or not. And unfortunately I didn't. It ended up being the next card, but, yeah, it was a lot of fun. So the way it works is, you have characters, you have actions, items, and I think that's it as far as card types. And what you do is, like, all of your cards have, like, a symbol around there, you know, have a cost to play. And what they do is they cost ink, which is, like, your resource. So mana or... I'm trying to, all the games that I've ever played that use resource stuff have mana. So, unlike Magic, you do not have to have special ink cards in your deck that take up space. But unlike Hearthstone, it's also not automatic. So what you do is, around your card's cost is you have either sort of like a circular symbol, or you have like a some sort of polygonal symbol. And if it's a circular symbol, that means that you can play it as ink instead of whatever card it is. I think this is really interesting. Like, this is a really interesting mechanic. So it leads to a lot of tough decision making of, do I need this card right now? Or you know, do I think I'm going to realistically get value out of this card during this match? If not, then I'm going to use it as a resource to be able to play cards that I think I'm going to get value out of. I think that's really interesting decision making going on. Your characters, you basically play, and that's sort of where the bulk of the game is. So your characters can do one of two things. They can either go on quests in which you exert them, which is you tap them, quote unquote, and you get points. And it's basically the first 20 points wins. So you get lore points, or you can exert your character to challenge another character in play that is exerted. And in which case, those two characters just fight, and they have like a power and toughness type stat. And like Hearthstone is when a character takes damage, those damage counters like go on your character. So their health is gradually reduced. It's not refreshed at the end of the turn like it is in Magic. So you can whittle down characters. And the goal is to sort of like kind of strike a balance between characters that you're going to quest with, characters that you're going to challenge with as like your defense to prevent your other, to prevent your opponent or opponents from gaining points. There are action cards, which just are one use and they go away. And then there's item cards, which you play them and they are persistent. You know, usually you have to exert it and pay some sort of cost. It might be like the item may end up being a one-time use effect where you exert it and then banish it, which is discard it. To do an effect, you may have to pay ink or something, but you get like a repeatable, generally a repeatable effect with it. And then there's a special type of action called songs, because it wouldn't be a Disney game without having songs in some form, right? So the way songs work is it's just an action, but it has an alternate cost where if you have a character that meets the criteria that's on the card, you can exert that character and then play the card for free. Usually it's a character that costs a certain amount, and it's usually a character with a cost equal to the cost of the song, right? So if you have a song that costs like two to play, you can usually exert a cost two or higher character to play that song for free. And songs are usually like more powerful. It's where a lot of very of your more powerful effects in the game happen. And that's kind of the game in a nutshell. You can do any number of things that you're able to do in any order you want. There's not really any sort of like interrupt instant type things. You can't really do stuff out of turn. So sort of, again, like Hearthstone in that regard. And so, like, I think it's sort of a nice level of complexity in between those two, because there's a lot of politicking and decision making that goes into, like, are you going to quest and leave your character open to challenges? Are you going to challenge with a character? Are you good? Are you just not going to do anything with them and keep them protected? For decision making that goes into building your deck, is decks are a minimum of 60 cards. You can't have more than four of a copy of a particular card. There's no legendary rules or anything like that. So, you know, if you have like four of a particular kind of Captain Hook or Stitch or Lilo or of a particular character, you know, you could have all four in play. You know, it's not like like Magic tries to do the thing of like, you can have multiple copies of a character as long as the name's different. So like, you know, I could have Minsk and Boo Timeless Heroes, but also have Minsk and Boo Beloved Ranger or Minsk Beloved Ranger in play, despite the fact that they're both Minsk, like they have different names, quote unquote. Whereas, you know, there's multiple kinds of Mickey Mice of Mickey Mouse, you know, different iterations of him. But even the same iteration, you can have multiple copies of. So a little bit of less complexity in that regard. And then the only other restriction is there are six gem material types, and you must pick two to build your deck. So a little bit of like Commander color identity in there, except they force you to pick two. You can't do monocolor. You can't do a rainbow deck and do all six colors. And then there's a little bit of color identity in each one, which is nice. And I hope they sort of further push those color identities. I made the mistake of thinking that the colors sort of matched one to one from Magic. And picked as my starter deck the Aladdin Cruella deck, which is red-green. I thought it was going to be very straightforward. You know, play big dudes, deal damage. and just go face, smork go face, you know. Very much not the case. I picked the control. I picked the advanced player control deck, apparently. So it was a lot of sort of battlefield manipulation and preventing people from getting points and stealing points. So very much outside of my sort of comfort zone. I typically don't like playing control, but it ended up being a lot of fun. And it was not the popular choice. The much more popular choice was Amethyst and Amber, which ended up being just a very straightforward. It's like card draw, recursions. So like if things would be discarded, they go back to your hand. Heal some healing, and just a lot of like value type stuff. And then I don't know if anybody picked the Sapphire and Steel one, which, as far as I understand it, was like ramp, which that would have been my go-to. and Steel's just weird. I don't know how to categorize it because it's kind of like red in Magic, where it's got it's like a lot of breaking things and direct damage. And like it does have some form of card draw in Magic, what is known as looting, where it's I can't remember if looting is you discard and then draw, or you draw and then discard, or if it doesn't matter, but it's essentially a neutral exchange, which doesn't work like if you don't have any cards. But it also has basically Wheel of Fortune for those who have played Magic, which is everybody discards their hand and then everybody draws 7 cards. It's wild. So, and oh my goodness. Oh, I've talked for far too long about this. So, first impressions, it's great. You know, I think this game, I think this game really has some strong legs to stand on. But honestly, I don't know if it would be this popular if it weren't for the Disney branding. So I think, you know, Disney branding definitely helping, which I think is going to help perhaps Ravensburger's case, maybe, against a top deck, in that, like, your game was going to be a dud. Because, like, if you did not have a recognizable IP behind it, you know, there might be like, oh yeah, this game's kind of fun, but, you know, is it going to have staying power? And the answer is probably not. Like, it would probably just be a very niche game. And I don't know, Top Deck's track record doesn't seem to be great for games. So, you know, inevitably it might have just fallen by the wayside, you know, after a year or so. Whereas this one will stick around. Certainly my hope is that a lot of the supply issues get fixed so that more people can play this game. And I'm really looking forward to playing more of it. I have like 6 decks planned out. I need to get the cards for those decks. I've got some weird concepts. Like one deck, which I don't know if it actually has a path to victory, but it's just about breaking all the things. And it's great. It's just all pirates, and you just shoot cannons and smash stuff. here we go. On to, and we're going to do this real quick, the quick fire news topics. So The Verge reports that DC District Court Judge Beryl A. Howell ruled that AI-generated artwork cannot be copyrighted as part of a lawsuit against the U.S. Copyright Office. The suit was brought against Stephen Thaler, I don't know, over a rejection of copyright. So he submitted a copyright claim for a piece of work multiple times, was rejected every time, and received a final rejection. And so was not happy about it, decided to sue the U.S. Copyright Office concerning an AI-generated image that was made with an algorithm he created. the sort of crux of the case seems to revolve around the fact that he tried to, the route that he chose to copyright the item or the image was, as that the algorithm was a work for hire for the owner of the algorithm, which is him. Like, instead of just like saying, hey, and I don't know if it's because similar, like, I don't know if it's because simpler claims of, you know, I entered the prompts and I built this algorithm. I own the copyright to this image. I don't know if like those have been ruled against. I don't know why he didn't try that in the first place, or if he did and it got thrown out. I don't know. Yeah, it seems to be a weird route to take. Judge Howell's ruling stipulates that, quote, human beings are an essential part of a valid copyright claim. So I don't know if it's like he could claim copyright over the actual algorithm itself. And if he wanted to, like, say, by definition, any work that is produced using this algorithm, I own the copyright to. I don't know. Like, it's getting in, and Judge Howell did also note, you know, this ruling is, you know, in their opinion, fairly straightforward. However, as the years go by and these AI programs get more and more complex, it may not be so clear cut, and we may need to revise how we think about copyright. And, you know, and did provide that stipulation. Obviously, this, you know, Mr. Taylor and his lawyer not happy about it. They're going to appeal. But also, I mean, it's also for my own personal opinion. Like, the art produced wasn't even that good. Like, it's kind of bad. So I don't know. And, you know, it didn't really go into detail as to how he trained this algorithm and whether he, you know, scraped data that didn't belong to him, which is another aspect of these rulings, is like, how are these being trained? Are you training them using public domain, or are you violating copyright to train these works? So, next up, Game Informer reports that the longtime voice of Mario, Charles Martinet, will no longer be cast in that role. Instead, he will move into the role of, quote, Mario Ambassador. Nintendo has said that it will share a special message from Shigeru Miyamoto and Martinet at a later date to sort of further talk about this. Very unusually, like, they just sort of put it out on Twitter. I'm not going to call it X. On other forms of social media, just sort of like blasted this message of just, you know, red text on a, or white text on a red background. So at first everybody was like terrified of if Martinet had passed, but it's no, he's not going to be voice casting or being cast as the voice of Mario in the future. There's not really any further discussion about what that will mean. I did see some speculation that it may just be that Nintendo has enough of a bank of voice effects, because like Mario doesn't say much, and so even for like Smash Ultimate, I guess it's like all recycled voice lines anyway, so they may just say like, we have this bank of voice effects. Like, we're good. We're just going to keep reusing them. And maybe if there's, you know, some way of like improving the fidelity, you know, in the future, but, you know, or if they're going to recast somebody else, I don't know. So, yeah. But Martinet will still, you know, I guess as Mario Ambassador will, you know, still professionally, like, be going out meeting the fans, and doing promos and things like that. So, yeah. He was the voice for a long time, starting with Super Mario 64. So, like, almost 30 years? Maybe it was 30 years that he's actually been in that role. But pretty close to it. So, next up, Nintendo Life reports that indie hit Cult of the Lamb is getting a crossover update with Don't Starve Together, which includes a survival mode called Penitence Mode, a unique spider follower who is immune to starvation, and Don't Starve Together themed decorations for your camp? Feels weird to call it a camp. Compound? So yeah, also it made it seem like there might also be Cult of the Lamb stuff coming to Don't Starve Together. There seemed to be some sort of little implication in the promo trailer. But at the very least, Cult of the Lamb is getting Don't Starve Together type stuff for it. The survival mode, the main point of it is basically that your main character, who normally doesn't have to worry about water and food, will now have to. Like, that's basically the point of it. And I guess so getting a little spider follower who no longer needs food is a pretty big deal. So, next up, The Verge reports that Microsoft is once again sunsetting the Kinect. So this time it's the Azure developer kits, the Kinect developer kits. Though it will continue to partner with outside companies to provide options for people who need a similar type of device for development. The developer kits will be available through the end of October, or quote, until supplies last, end quote. Those who have one will be able to continue using it without disruption, according to Microsoft's Swati Mehta. I hope I pronounced that correctly. So once again, it's like they brought it out and they sunset the Kinect, and then they were like, oh, we're going to bring it back for developers. And now they're going to no longer produce it again. So there we go. Dicebreaker reports that a small team led by game developer Pavel Kolev has created a digital app, an unofficial digital app for playing Lorcana, speaking of. The app functions similarly to Hearthstone, where you can view your digital collection. It has like a playing board, animations, and all that stuff. And I don't know if it's, like, obviously this is smarter, you know, I don't know if this is going to actually protect them from litigation or not, but they made sure not to include any official artwork or assets from the game. So what you end up doing is, like, everything is just grayed out. But apparently you can upload your own images. So it kind of essentially relying on the user to commit the copyright infringement for them. This app is currently available on PC and Mac. Mobile support is currently being worked on. I would say if this is of interest to you, maybe go check it out before litigation happens. You know, I don't know if there's progress. I don't know how a collection works. Like if it's just you just decide to build a deck using whatever cards and it just gives that to you, or if there's some sort of progression system or what. I don't know, like, because it's unofficial, I don't know if they're really able to do a lot of in-game monetization. So we'll see. And finally, last up, The Verge reports, this is the weird news. that Sony is releasing a streaming handheld for the PS5 later this year. Now, before you say, oh, that's just Sony copying Nintendo, making a Switch. No. This is Sony copying Nintendo to make a Wii U gamepad. This device will allow streamer users to stream titles from their PS5 over Wi-Fi to this device. Sony did not indicate if the device needed to be on the same Wi-Fi network as the console. It seemed to be implied. The handheld will also not allow you to stream games to from your console if it's part of like the PlayStation Plus, where you stream the games on your console. So like you can't stream it to your console and then from there stream it to the device. Like it just, they won't do it. It will also not have Bluetooth, but will have like DualSense controller capabilities. It will instead use Sony's proprietary PlayStation Link technology, which is coming to newer versions of their PS5 consoles. And it will allow for wired headphones. This is wild. I don't know what to make of this. Like, and the device will retail for $199. Like, this is almost the price of a Switch. Like, for $200. Battery life is expected to be somewhere between 7 to 9 hours. Maybe that's the goal. I don't know if it's going to do that. If like, because that's currently the battery life of the controller, like the DualSense controller. I don't know how they get there if you also have a screen. Yeah, I just, and especially also like apparently you can stream this stuff to your phone already. So like, I don't know outside of a very niche market who this is for. And it's also the joke of like, Sony always just copies Nintendo on whatever they do. Like, so they're doing that and then also doing it a generation late, which I don't know. And like the Wii U gamepad was at its best when it was doing asynchronous gameplay or asymmetrical gameplay. I'm sorry. You know, like having it so that, you know, as you're playing, like you have a little pause screen, you know, like in Wind Waker, you have the little map in your inventory and everything on the pad. Sure. But really the best one was with like Nintendo Land, where the person who's playing on the gamepad just has an entirely different view of what's going on than the other players do. I don't know what this is for. Like, I don't, so you can play elsewhere in your house, but I don't know. It seems like a lot of folks who get PS5s really want to stress like the 4K aspect of it, in which you're not going to get 4K on this screen. So, and you have to hope that your Wi-Fi is good enough. So yeah. I guess more power to you, Sony. So yeah, it's just, I couldn't pass it up. It's just some weird, weird news there. Well, that is going to wrap up this week's episode. Sorry for the total rambling on Borkana, but I really wanted to talk about that. And admittedly, I was afraid that I wasn't going to have enough stuff to talk about with just the news, and then ended up going over. So, yeah, whatever. If you would like to see more content from 8-Bit Adventures, you can check out our website at 8bitadventures.com. If you'd like to help support that content, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. Both of those links are in the description. Whether you're watching YouTube live on the VOD, or if you're an audio listener, it's all in the description right there. Big shout out to thank you to all of the current patrons. Thank you for your continued support and for keeping the lights on. Definitely, as of late, it's a big help. So, thank you. And the opening theme is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. Had to have used that as the theme for this podcast for 287 episodes. And I still remember the day that I asked him, that I sent him the, and I said, hey, can I use it? And he was super, super awesome about it. So thanks, Professor Shy Guy. With that, we're going to wrap things up. Hope you all have a wonderful week. Hope that you are able to get out there and play some Lorcana. And as always, have fun, happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.